This is Ozarks at Large. Recently, stop the presses. We are shocked to find out that the United States spies on other countries. Here to help us figure out if this has ever happened before, I think I know the answer, is our history doctor, Bill Smith. Welcome back.
Great to be here.
One of the impacts is the revelation that we, the U.S., gather intelligence on the members of the G8.
Again, not unique to this era.
But many would argue that we should be above this.
Well, remember, George Washington was not only the father of our country, the commander of the Colonial Army, but he was also our first spy master.
Okay. I'm going to defend George here a little bit, because that was a time of war when we were trying to get our independence. You got to give him some slack for spying then, right?
Well, okay. Let's put it into a time of peace, and let's give it some framework somewhat like the G8.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Washington Naval Conference in the 1920s, the 20th century forerunner of 21st century problems and ideas, if there ever was one?
Okay, I may be the only one hearing your voice that doesn't remember this, but for my benefit, help me out with the Washington Naval Conference. I don't remember that right off the top of my head.
Well, let's remember that technology isn't something that Al Gore invented along with the internet.
Okay.
Okay. Since Samuel Morse developed digital communications in the 1800s and Alexander Graham Bell added voice to wire, we have used technology to defeat time and distance in our communications.
Sure.
Okay? So coming out of the First World War, there's a couple of things happening. Number one, a great commitment globally to avoid the horror that was the First World War, and let's do that by limiting arms.
Right.
Does that sound very latter 20th century-ish?
Mm-hmm.
And the other, that we need to know what's happening on the other side. We had experienced it ourselves with the Zimmerman telegram dropped on us by the British, and we had decided as a nation it was time for the United States to create a special agency designed to detect and decode the messages of foreign countries. Located within the State Department, it was officially known as the Cipher Bureau, or the Black Chamber, as it became known later. This became a factor in one of the first major arms limitation treaty negotiations in the world, which was the Washington Naval Conference.
Okay. Okay.
So the desire of the world was to stop those horrors of the trench and the perceived unprecedented killing of the First World War. If nations could limit the strategic weapons of the day, gigantic ships bristling with cannons that were known both as battleships and dreadnoughts, even bigger than battleships, the chance of another global war might be reduced.
This, okay, go back to when we were adolescents and you had the SALT talks, right? Strategic arms limitation talks. And that was to, if we limit the nuclear capabilities of everybody, we can't blow ourselves up.
Yes. Yeah, so quite literally, if you substitute nuclear weapon for battleship, you get a pretty clear analogy.
Now bring me back into spies. You were talking about spies earlier.
All right. The Black Chamber intercepted and broke the messages of the delegates that were there, particularly the Japanese, who were the rising power of the day.
Quite a concern.
Yes. England and the United States wanted to limit Tokyo's ability to build a modern navy. What was being negotiated was a reduction in the number of battleships for everyone to limit the size and number and in relation or proportion to other nations. This is where the work of the Cipher Bureau comes into play.
Okay.
They were able to see that the Japanese negotiators, talking back to their government in Tokyo, had come to a point how far they would go before they just walked. Obviously, in negotiation, if you know how far your opponent's going to go, that's a major coup.
Sure.
So, in tapping these communications, we understand that the proportion that we can push the Japanese to in relation to these other two countries is 5 to 5 to 3. The Royal Navy in the U.S. would be the fives, and the Imperial Navy would be the much smaller three.
In hindsight, it looks like that was, you know, time well spent.
And it was. And as many would say later, that we managed to somehow convince the Japanese to accept a Rolls-Royce, Rolls-Royce, and Ford navies.
Okay, so can you draw a line between this Black Chamber and the NSA?
Well, not directly.
Okay.
The discovery later by Henry L. Stimson, serving as Secretary of State for Herbert Hoover, will end the Cipher Bureau and the Black Chamber. He shut it down, ending Americans' cryptography operations in the State Department in 1929, famously making the quote that, "Gentlemen, do not read each other's mail.
Well, perhaps gentlemen don't.
Yes. Well, perhaps it was an echo in his mind back to the intercepting of mail and telegraphic messages done by the British, and that pushed us in some ways
into
that Great War. The irony, though, is that when Stimson leaves, when Hoover leaves, and he returns later to public service in 1940 as Franklin Roosevelt's Secretary of War, there was no squeamishness at all in using code breaking and other signal interception techniques against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Well, exactly. This is all very interesting. Get me to how this relates to Edward Snowden.
Well, on the surface, it doesn't. Snowden himself relates more to Daniel Ellsberg and the release of the Pentagon Papers.
Mm-hmm.
The cases have a lot of similarities. Daniel Ellsberg was working for Rand Corporation. People sometimes forget that. Government contractor.
Right.
When he made the decision to reveal the project he was working on, what became known as the Pentagon Papers was a collection of documents and internal history of what America had done in relation to the war in Vietnam and how they had portrayed deliberately things to the American people. They revealed that the Defense Department had determined the war was unwinnable, and some of the misdirection used to hide this fact and other important details about the war from the American public.
But now, hasn't Daniel Ellsberg commended Snowden for his leaking?
Well, and this is one of those unique moments in American history when the past can directly connect to the present. And as a result, we should be careful about inferring exactly where that leads us in the future. Let's consider. Do we believe that any sophisticated nation would not already be aware of our ability to look into their communications?
Right.
We kept our optical surveillance capabilities in black budgets and top secret cover ever since Edward Land's inventions in photography gave us a little bit more than Polaroid pictures during the Cold War. I'm reminded in particular of Dwight Eisenhower as president, announcing that he wished to have an open skies initiative, that everyone would allow everybody to look at their stuff as a way of confirmation during this ratcheting up of nuclear arms on both sides.
So when you say everyone to look at everyone, every country was completely open?
Correct.
That was his
idea. We've got nothing to hide. We want to be able to see what you're doing. Sounds a little bit like Ronald Reagan, trust and verify in a future sense. So,
was anyone actually trusting each other, though?
Well, you know, that's sort of the interesting thing about how Eisenhower is going to propose this, and there are a lot of idealists around the world that would accept that. But let's be honest, the Soviet Union, who was built upon the premise of a tremendous amount of secrecy, was not about to agree with that. No how, no way. Did that stop Dwight Eisenhower from following through with open skies? No, not one bit, because it didn't prevent us from first overflying with spy planes, a fact that got famously revealed by the shooting down of a U-2 spy plane in the capture and show trial of its CIA pilot, Francis Gary Powers, and then later satellites that would do the same.
Didn't that all happen right before a major international meeting for the president?
Well, indeed. And if there is our sort of link where Snowden comes back around to this talk about, oh, this is going to hurt the president because he's going to the G8, and now the G8 knows that we're... Indeed, you have Eisenhower's program to gain better intelligence on just how many nuclear intercontinental ballistic missiles were held by the Soviets being revealed right in front of a major four-power summit in Paris set for May of 1960. As a result, Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev would use the event to publicly embarrass Eisenhower and walk out of the talks.
Give me the real takeaway from all of this.
Okay. We exist in two realities. The one that we know, and the one that history will reveal over time. Let's go back to the Washington Naval Conference, where we started this long walk through the woods.
Right.
By having the knowledge that the Japanese would settle for a reduction in battleships and that 5-5-3 proportion, the American negotiators were to get the victory they wanted for military advantage in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
What they gave up, however, proved far more significant. Focused on items that would help create the East Asia co-prosperity sphere, Japan's plan for dominance in what we would today call the Pacific Rim, the Japanese negotiators won from the Americans and the British the concession that military installations that those two nations had in the region could not be further fortified.
Oh.
Thus, in early 1940, the Imperial Japanese Army was able to crush the British at Singapore, and the Americans were forced to abandon Manila for the island of Corregidor and eventually also surrender, leading to the Bataan Death March for the survivors.
Mm-hmm.
The entire purpose of the conference was rendered moot by changing technology. Focused on refighting the last war, the battleship became nothing more than floating artillery to support invasion in the next war. The two afterthoughts of the treaty, aircraft carriers and submarines, became the decisive naval weapons of the coming war. In the end, knowing the other side's cards didn't necessarily lead to intelligent decisions in the future.
Try to be the smartest person in the room, but don't assume you are.
Exactly.
Well, until they open up the Google time capsule in 2525.
We're history. We'll be right back.